Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome. Thanks for listening in. My name is Linda Mooney. This is Other Worlds of Romance on Blog Talk Radio, and I'm so happy tonight. I've got Shauna Reppert as my guest author. Hi, Shauna. How are you doing?
Oh, doing just great. Thank you for having me.
Oh, delighted to have you on board. Shauna's a fellow author with a certain publishing house, and I'm just thrilled that she agreed to come on the show tonight. She's going to be reading from Raven's Wing, which is book two of her Raven's Blood series. And for those of you who don't know, Shauna is an award-winning author of fantasy and steampunk who keeps her readers up all night and makes them miss work deadlines. Oh, man, you are just insidious, girl. Her fiction answers questions for which there are no easy answers while taking readers on a fine adventure that grips them heart and soul. You can find her work on Amazon and follow her blog on her website. Her website is Shauna, S-H-A-W-N-A-Reppert, R-E-P-P-E-R-T.com. You can friend her on Facebook, follow her on Twitter, where she posts an amazing array of geekery. Shauna can also sometimes be found in medieval garb on a caparisoned horse, throwing javelins into innocent hay bales that never did anything to her. I've got to ask, what's a caparisoned horse?
Oh, caparison. Caparison is, if you've seen the medieval movies, you know, they put them, you know, with the knights and the javelins and the jousting, the pretty flowy thing, garment thing that you put on a horse.
Yeah. Kind of like the tablecloth that's hanging over him or something with all the things.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. That's the description of it. Yes.
Okay. If you'd like to call in, please do, and talk to Shauna after she gets through reading her excerpt. The phone number is 646-727-2932. Or if you are sitting in the chat room and listening in, please, you can just type in your question. I'd be more than happy to relay it to her. Or if you're sitting on Facebook and listening, or you're sitting on the website and listening, you can email me your question, linda@lindamooney.com, and I'd be more than happy to ask her the question for you. Now, Raven's Blood, like I said, is two. And
Raven's Wing is book two.
Raven's Blood was the first book. Now, in Raven's Wing, I'm going to read the excerpt for you here. Raven struggled to escape the world of dark magic he'd committed to as a bitter young man. Now he must come to terms with both his past and his ancestry. What will be his place in the three communities? You see, I've got to ask you what the three communities are. When he finds himself on the run, trying to find the stolen Raven's Blood, the task grows much harder. He must protect the people he has come to care about from the danger of this powerful artifact in the wrong hands, and at the same time prove he is not the thief. Now, for those who have not read Raven's Blood just yet, you want to give us a little bit about what that book is about?
I kind of wrote the little introduction here. So for those of you who haven't read it, I apologize for slight spoilers. But we're in a very alternate universe version of the Pacific Northwest. Magic is real and openly acknowledged. And the three communities are ruled by a joint council representing art. That would be the mages and practitioners of high magic. Craft, that's all the shamanic and Wiccan folk, and mundane, and those are the people who he'd have either no aptitude for or no interest in magic. Mm-hmm. And just to set the stage, in the last book, the notorious dark mage Corwin Ravenscroft, or Raven, with the help of Cassandra Greenstown, his former apprentice and lover he once betrayed, redeemed himself and won a pardon from the Joint Council by spying against and ultimately bringing down his master, William, who had been trying to overthrow the elected government to set himself up as ruler absolute. So the beginning of this book, Cass and Raven are lovers once again. Cass has been promoted from her former job as a guardian, and that's magical law enforcement for the three communities, to guardian international investigations. And GII handles complicated cases that are beyond the scope and abilities of the local guardians and tends to hire misfits and eccentrics, sometimes with questionable pasts, like Cassandra. So in the last book, Raven used the Raven's Blood, which is a magical artifact of immense power, to bring down William. The Raven's Blood was deemed too dangerous to be left in the hands of a dark mage, former or otherwise. And since it requires a tie to the Ravenscroft line to wield it, the Raven's Blood was locked away for safekeeping. Only now it has gone missing. So Raven's been doing some unpaid, unofficial consulting on difficult cases for the GII, and it was natural that they called him in on this investigation. And you'll have to forgive him in the beginning of this piece, not in the best of moods. Not only is he dealing with the missing Raven's Blood, but he's having to deal with guardians, most of whom are not really too happy to see him. And just one tiny bit of information you'll need. The Sherlock mentioned is not, of course, Sherlock Holmes, but is Cass and Chucky's boss, given name Abigail Andrews. And she got the name Sherlock for her Anglian accent and her unusual pipe smoking habits, as well as a slight affectation for tweed.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, well, I'm just going to turn the floor over to you. And for those of you who are on hold, just hold on, and I'll get to you as soon as we get through with the excerpt. So, Shauna, just take it away.
Okay. Cass called Chucky on their way to the council building. Mundane cell phones took some getting used to. It required charging, as message crystals did not. But they had the advantage of portability, which was one of the reasons GII had started insisting its agents carry them. Chucky here. Any worries that she might be waking her partner were allayed by the electronic chirping of a video game in the background. Briefly, she explained the situation to him. "We're just about at the council building now," she said. "Can you meet us there? I need your expertise on the electronic alarm." No one had a feel for a magical hack like her partner. "Sure." She could hear his eager grin through the phone. "Be right there." "Do you need a teleport anchor?" Cass asked. "Nah, know the place well enough. Used to date a PA that worked there, so I found out she was just using me for my technology. Left me for a guy with a bigger mainframe." The thing with Chucky, you never knew when he was joking. Raven frowned as she made the call, but didn't comment. This was her investigation and her area of expertise, and he would respect that. Cass had visited her aunt at the council building, often enough to teleport there easily. Once there, she allowed Raven to use her as his teleport anchor, closing her eyes so she wouldn't have to see him materialize. Witnessing someone fade in still made her queasy. "Cass!" Chucky stood on the steps of the neoclassical building, waving his arms as though trying to catch her attention in a crowd at a distance. Though he was maybe 10 yards away, and save for the night guard, they were the only ones there at this hour. "Come on," she said to Raven. "I'll introduce you." Raven made a noise deep in his throat that meant both disapproval and reluctant agreement, and followed her up the stairs. "Cass, hey!" Chucky beamed. "Wow, is that Raven?" "Indeed." Raven bent his head fractionally, his tone cold and formal. "Wow!" Chucky's beaming smile got, if anything, brighter. "This is such an honor." "Thank you." He looked Chucky up and down, taking his measure, and then glanced at Cass as if to say, "This is your partner?" She bristled on Chucky's behalf, even though her first reaction to meeting her partner had been very much the same, until she had seen him work. "Shall we?" Raven indicated the open council doors. They slipped past the police scene, do not cross tape, and up to the door. The guardians at the entrance expected them and did not interfere, although from the looks they gave Raven, they badly wanted to. Raven paused to get a read on the door wards, which had been left open in anticipation of their arrival. "Anything?" she asked. "Not enough of the signature to identify," he said. "But then, if we're dealing with a mage of any real ability, he would have scarcely had to exert himself to get through these flimsy things." He put a hand just above the door lock. "I'm not sensing anything here at all. If he used magic to pick it, there should be at least a whisper of a signature. He must have either had a copy of the key manually." Cass knelt to examine the surface of the lock for the telltale scratches of lock picks. "No marks. Either he's really good or he had a key." Raven's mouth tightened. If the thief had a key, that only made more likely what they both already suspected, an inside job. Someone high up had been working with William before his fall, and that person had never been identified. Their footsteps echoed in the empty building, the dim light of the security lights casting their shadows across the polished floor. Though she had been to this building many times from childhood on with her aunt, the darkness and the silence transformed it into something alien and unnerving. Reminding herself that she had dealt with things in her career far worse than an after-hours building, she led the way up the long spiral staircase and to the outer door of the room where the Raven's blood had been kept. Chucky made a cursory examination of the alarm on the door. "I don't find any of the telltale signs that the alarm's been bypassed. The thief must have somehow got the codes." Raven made a low sound, almost a growl. The sound he made when a problem was proving particularly intractable. "Even I know Mother Crone would not betray her responsibilities, so." "There are other ways to get a code. Trojan viruses, Trojan spells that copy keystrokes," Chucky said. "Wouldn't they leave some sort of a sign?" Raven asked. Cass hadn't realized he knew even that much about technology magic. Even Raven had his blind spots, and usually they involved mundane technology, even where it interfaced with magic. "It could, but the magic flourishes are usually set to shut down after the information is acquired, and like anything else, the magical signatures fade with time. Or the Trojan could be on another device entirely. You wouldn't believe how many people use the same password for everything. So I guess it's your show now. You're the master with wards. Can you tell us how they've been bypassed?" None of them wanted to voice the possibility that the wards had not been tampered with. Cass made a mental note to check the whereabouts last night of the three heads of the Joint Council. Raven set to work. It would take a while. Chucky took out his phone. He had paid for an upgrade that allowed him to play solitaire and other games that Cass always mangled the name of. He was on that thing so much she had more than once considered staging an intervention. A sound from below drew her attention. Glancing down, she saw the non-GII guardians approaching. Some few of them she even knew vaguely. They had not been on good terms, but she had not seen them since Raven had taken down William. Hopefully, her involvement in that incident would have won her some points, because if she couldn't persuade them not to disturb Raven while he was working, things were going to get ugly. Oh, hell, Ramirez was with them. No way this was going to end pleasantly. Her former colleague stopped at the base of the stairs. Good. They didn't need to be here at all. A crime of this magnitude needed the special resources and training of the GII, though she supposed the local guardians would make a bid for the investigation based on the theft having occurred on their turf. She took a few deep breaths and pushed away her irritation. Accommodation would have to be made eventually to keep them in the loop, but not here, not now. With the signatures still fresh to be read, and Raven still on edge. It would fall to her to place the voice of reason. Chucky, bless his heart, lacked the social skills to negotiate with anything other than a computer. She so did not need this right now, not with the tension already boiling in her gut. her former colleagues arrayed themselves at the bottom of the stairs, a defensive formation she recognized well. Her problems were bigger than she imagined. She hissed softly under her breath and got Chucky's attention. Raven remained too absorbed in his work to notice. "Oh, damn," Chucky said. "They're not exactly here to watch and learn, are they?" Cass shook her head. "I vote we get him," he jerked his head toward Raven, "someplace safe, and sort it all out from there." She would have hugged Chucky had there been time. She did not trust her former colleagues, not where Ravenscroft was concerned, and not when there was so much he would not tell her about his last experience in custody. She could not be certain he would go quietly, was not certain she wanted him to go quietly. If William had survived and was behind the theft of the Raven's blood, then Raven would be his first target, both as a traitor to William and as a top threat to his intentions. She couldn't bear the thought of her lover helpless behind magic dampening fields, not when William had demonstrated his ability to infiltrate the heart of their justice system and kill those supposedly safe in custody. "Raven," she called to get his attention. Helping him elude the local guardians would leave GII with a lot of ruffled feathers to soothe, but it remained the best alternative. Just then, the anti-teleportation ward came down. Trapped! Cass gasped at the shock of it. Rage blazed through her. For one guardian to do this to others, and to a civilian working with the GII. She looked up at her lover. He had gone white, and the black fire rage in his eyes made him look every bit the fearsome dark mage had once been. "Corwin Ravenscroft, I have a warrant for your arrest," Ramirez said, a smile playing on his lips, belying any effort he might make at pretending official detachment. "Ridiculous," Cass called back, stalling for time. "We're here on order from GII. Stand down." The council itself swore out the warrant. That supersedes the authority of the GII. The man oozed smugness. The local guardian's resentment of the flashier, more powerful, and less by-the-book GII was the stuff of mystery novel subplots. Sadly, fiction only mirrored the truth of the thing. "What are the charges?" "Burglary of a public building, theft of a magical artifact." Had Ramirez gone to the council, or had the council gone to him? Quick work either way. Or had this been in process even as they had invited Raven to work with them? If so, she'd unwittingly led her love. Sherlock would not have set them up, but she could have been kept out of the loop. Raven joined the conversation. "If I had taken the Raven's blood, why on earth would I be here with GII? Controlled anger lay beneath her lover's reasoning tone. Sadly, no matter what effort he put into remaining calm, any contribution of his to the conversation would only escalate the tension. "To throw the investigation off track, of course," Ramirez smirked. Raven gave a dark, cold laugh that reminded Cass all too much of his former master. "You have no concept of the power of the Raven's blood. Do you think if I had it once more that I would care about the results of your silly little investigation?" She had always feared his tendency to play the dark mage to anyone who treated him as such would get him killed someday. "Please, gods, let me not be proven right today." She pulled him aside to confer. "You broke a magic dampening field once," she whispered. "Can't you break a teleportation barrier?" "You forget I had the Raven's blood then. You must appreciate the irony." His tone was bitter. "Only because I am not guilty of their accusations, stand here and be subjected to them." "What's the deal?" Chucky interjected. "Cass can open a teleportation barrier." Raven looked down his long, elegant nose at the younger mage. "Blivey's paradox. Or don't they teach that in Guardian Academy these days?" Blivey's paradox said that a mage could not simultaneously hold open the teleportation barrier and teleport himself. "Raven, love, it's okay. We need to get you out of here." He took her hands, stepped closer to her. "I will not leave you." Rarely did he show such affection in public. It was not his way. For him to do so here, in front of his enemies, brought a lump to her throat. Despite that, because of that, she could not relent. Okay.
Oh, man. Gosh. I get this vision of this real powerful man, dark hair. I mean, is this Raven? Is this him?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. My gosh. It's just, ooh, what visuals. You have just a way with the words, I tell you. Oh, that's wonderful. We have a, our caller we had kind of left. You're welcome to call back again. Meanwhile, we have a question here from a Joni R42. She wants to know, is Raven immortal?
No. Everyone in this, everyone in these novels is mortal, is human. It's alternate universe in that magic is real, but everyone is human in these novels. If you want elves, you can look at my other novels.
On Raven's Blood and on Raven's Wing, you have a raven, of course, on the cover.
Yes.
Is this just his symbol, or is he able to, is that his familiar, or is that what he can turn into, or what is the reasoning behind the bird on the cover?
It's purely symbolic. The Dead Honest Reason is the first book I needed a stock image I could afford. And the second book, I needed to match the cover on the first book. But I have a raven motif running through all the books. The family name is Ravenscroft, and it's, you know, there's raven symbols all over the house. So, and there's also symbolic things going from the end of the first book to the beginning of the second book in terms of Cass's acceptance of her association with him is represented by her starting to put raven stuff all over. So,
Oh, goodness gracious. We have, hold on, Aston. Aston wants to know, what does the raven's blood look like? The artifact, I guess. Yeah, what does the artifact look like?
It is roughly the size and shape of a hen's egg, an egg you'd eat for breakfast. It's a deep ruby color. If you've ever seen like ruby backed with gold or ruby in a certain light, just that kind of, it doesn't quite glow, but it has that really rich luminance that a really good quality ruby would have.
Goodness, which is the reason why it's got the name blood on it, because of that coloring, right? The coloration.
That's one of the reasons. And then it's also associated with the Ravenscroft family. It was created by Raven and his apprentice, who died in the creation in the first book, from instructions from a Ravenscroft journal that's passed down through the Ravenscroft bloodline, one heir to the other, and is only ever handled by Ravenscroft. So it's associated with the family bloodline as well. So it kind of has a lot of deeper symbology, because of a lot of the book is Raven coming to terms with his ancestry, literally the bloodline. See there? Hello, have I lost call? Hello? 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 Oh, my son is saying I'm connected, but I'm not hearing anyone else. Hello? 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 Are we still online? Hello? Hello? Hello?
Hey, Linda? Linda?
Hi, am I connected?
Yeah, hi, Linda. I don't know what happened. I just suddenly stopped hearing anything. The phone was still saying I was connected, but nothing was coming through.
Huh? Well, nothing was coming on the podcast either, but that means I got to get through right away. I was calling and wanted to know why you like, what is it about Portland that makes you want to set your novels in it?
I think because I've lived in Portland for a number of years. I still live outside of Portland, and I have just a deep love for the city. I'm also just really familiar with it. So when I started, was working on it very early draft stages, and I was, you know, was setting it at that time in an alternate universe, but I wasn't using the word Portland, but it was similar to Portland, and I was chatting up an agent, chatting up in the sense of trying to get a contract, not trying to get a date. I was chatting up an agent. So I was chatting up an agent at a conference, and he said, you know, no, it's not an alternate. It's not. He says, it's not a city like Portland. Put it in Portland. He says, it's going to be easier for you. It's going to give you a lot more of a connection with your Northwest audience. And I really found that's true. I found a lot of people just, they recognize things in the novel, or they are not from Portland and they want to come to Portland and see the places in the novel. Some of them are real, some of them aren't. I kind of put in the foreword or a little section in Ravenswing, kind of an idea of some of the stuff that is real and some of that it's, that's not. And there's actually an ebook version connections to websites for some of the places that exist. So I think it's really made the book more powerful, setting it in a city like Portland. It's just such a great city to begin with.
That is cool. Are you going to put any, are there any settings in Portland that you're going to, that you have your eye on to put in future books?
Yeah, one of them that I'm looking at, actually a friend of mine, who was actually one of my beta readers from France, came over and was looking at Portland with me because she wanted to see the places where the books took place. And then, of course, I took her on the tour of the places that you need to see if you're in Portland. And one of the places we stopped at was Vista House. And she said, well, does Vista House exist in your world? And I thought, well, there's no reason why it wouldn't. It should. And then, of course, I started looking at Vista House. And in my world, it does exist. It has a very different significance. So I'm still working all through all the backstory. That's going to come up probably certainly not in the next novel. In one of the future novels, there's kind of a standalone that involves Raven's son that's going to come up. So, and
yeah, Vista House
that
is,
one. Pardon?
Oh, Vista House is a. It's sort of like a lighthouse without a light. It's kind of
lonely.
Yeah,
that's a good